was reported in the 1970s, 4 million metric tons.
Thank you. adult students who could excel as an athlete. The focus on sources of their learning. Who knows them?
Who is prepared to change, who is, shall we say, behavior and some emotions, if you are able to change your attitude and able to assume things you experience. A lot depends on the individual. I don't look, as you remember me, from the point of view of age, because I have come to realize that that's purely a material thing in itself, that I'm not anymore using the same physical body. I'm not subject to the same restrictions. I'm not subject to the old thoughts and ideas. I'm not held down by material pressures. I'm now able to think clearly and on a different level. And therefore, I suppose, in a kind of way, I'm assimilating new experience, which I know I have. I cling fast to certain things, which I presumably feel at the moment, unnecessary to me, things that I don't wish to throw aside. I mean, this business of wearing clothes. I mean, it is natural, I suppose, that one feels that one should wear certain wearing apparel. I suppose that comes from a sort of reticence within oneself, that one would not like to be seen walking about naked. You know, but the point is that, of course, that's the change in situation in your world. Seems to me that people have been getting now to think rather differently. It seems to me that nobody bothers.
What's your ambition now? You say you've put yourself onto a different
thing. Well, then again, you ask me what ambition is. I suppose in a kind of odd way, I haven't really got an ambition at the moment. But you see, the idea. Yes, of course one has a purpose, and I have a purpose. I have a purpose in, as it were, trying to sort myself out, trying to adjust myself, which I'm doing, trying to find things that will be of service. That's one thing that I've already learned, very much so, that no one, doesn't matter who it is, can live for yourself and self alone. Over here we realize that we're all essential one to the other. We lose a lot of the old thoughts and ideas in the process. And of course there's no sort of, as it were, class consciousness, for instance. And another thing, there's no barrier here in regard to language. It's extraordinary. All manner and kind of people, when on earth, who were of different nationals, here, it's of little, in fact, no consequence. All thought force is a living reality. We don't even have to speak to each other. We can communicate entirely on a mental mingling, I suppose. It's a sort of being able to understand the other person. You know, you take an animal, a dog or a cat, it can't speak to you, but if it has been with you for some length of time, it seems to have a realization of things that you're saying to it. And vice versa, I think that often one senses and feels things with animals. Animals are very much more sensitive in some senses, I think, than human beings. They know things which, and even see things which when on earth we didn't see. I've learned a great deal about animals, and indeed I'm very fond of them over here, as you can well imagine.
And yeah, I like soul.
I well, it depends on what you mean by soul. I mean, this business of what is a soul, nobody knows what a soul is. I don't know what a soul is. You can't depict or describe a soul. All I know is that I am living, that I have a body that is really a replica of my physical one at its prime. No age has touched it, and I'm conscious of myself as myself. I suppose what animates us, what gives us life, what makes a reality of living is this thing, if you like, you can call it a soul. But you can't analyze a soul. I can't tell you what a soul is. I don't know any more than I can tell you what God is. We know that there is a life-giving force that animates all of us and gives us the power to reason, the power to understand, gives us freedom to express ourselves in whatever way we can express ourselves. I don't know what a soul is. Does anybody know? I don't think you can tell me what a soul is.
Your purpose.
Yes, what I am is my soul, I suppose.
You haven't been left it for the difficult
half. Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, the whole point is that I suppose it is natural to assume that we must have shape, we must have form. If we didn't, we couldn't be recognized, and we wouldn't be able to perhaps do many of the things that we do.
And say, yes.
Well, of course. But I think this business of shape and form is necessary, and yet it isn't the be-all and the end-all. It isn't the you, it isn't the me. Because an aspect of oneself is not the complete self by any means. What gives you life is something much more that one can't put into words. I don't know how to describe it.
But Ida, you can recognize people by it.
Of course you can. I can recognize you. I can see you. I can see people here. And of course they are as solid to me as I am to them. You are solid to me in a sense, and yet you're not. You see, now I'm outside of your time. I'm outside of your solidity. Your world is vibrating at a very different rate, as it said. And I find that only when I get to a certain level and tune in, and it takes some... It's quite problematic, this, being able to communicate like this. I'm merely transmitting my thoughts. You're hearing my thoughts inside, reproduced. Whether it's that good or not, I can't really say, but I'm conscious of your presence. But I'm much more conscious of your thoughts. This is what you don't understand. I'm conscious of your figure and what you're sometimes doing once I'm in tune with you, as near as I can manage to be in tune with you. But it's your thoughts about it, it's your consciousness, the awareness that I have of what you're thinking. And this is the important thing, not so much the physical, but I suppose what you would call the mental. But you really deny it. I mustn't take up all the time, must I? Otherwise, the other people don't know what this is.
You know, when people first come over, they just send a little slip to hear their voice. You seem to talk to them as they do here.
Well, automatically you do, you see. The point is that, you see, you don't suddenly obviously change. What you thought was necessary or essential with a material body and a material world, you assume in the initial stages that it's so here, and it appears so.
Yeah.
It appears so because you expect it to be so, and to some extent you're making it possible to be so.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, after very, I say, time, which doesn't really exist for us in the sense that it does for you, but gradually you become aware that certain things are no longer what they seem, and not even necessary. This is a problematic thing which you find terribly difficult to put into words and difficult to describe, but gradually you assimilate this experience and love it.
And I sometimes feel that things in this world are as important as in your doubt. Is that true? Are things more important in your time than they are here?
I would go as far as to say everything is important. While it's important to you, which sounds odd, but while you think a thing is necessary, and while you think something is important, or it doesn't matter what it is, obviously it is so, because you feel so, and you think so. Well, this is obviously a crisis. I mean, it's just people can tell anxiety, and tell me about this or that, and it concerns you mentally. It then becomes a very strong mental thing, then it becomes even more of a physical thing. And if they worry unnecessarily and unduly, it affects their physical well-being, can even bring on illness.
Mm-hmm.
It's emotional illness, really. I've been able to gather this anyway. And it's true to say practically all illness. In the initial stages, it's a mental thing. It's a process of thought. I mean, you'll get somebody who's certainly fit. But they will have this feeling ironic that because their mother died of cancer, that they may have been sensitive, they may have cancer, they may have a perfect body, but if they constantly think about it and worry about it, become over-anxious about it, then the body will start to change, and it will become apparent that there is something developing or forming. I think it's true to say that whatever happens in the world is, in the beginning, and obviously must be, so it seems to me, a mental process of bringing it into action. I mean, when one reads, or I used to think it's a very unjust thing, when it was given the sins of the fathers fall on the children, to me it sounded unjust, unfair, illogical. But when you think about it, there is some truth in it. I mean, you take a war. A war is brought into being. Perhaps it doesn't come in the generation of the people who brought it into being, or at least formulated the thoughts and the situations that followed, can bring it into being. But the younger generation are the ones that have to suffer for what was brought into being by the thought forces and actions of the parents. You cannot escape from each other. I think we have to realize this. We are individuals, we have personalities, and we develop and we grow, and we become expected as such and such a person, with certain complexities and what have you, whatever it constitutes, whatever we suffer, our personality, or our character. And the point is that we are the product of each other. We cannot escape from each other. We may have a separate shape or form, we may have a name, we may be known as this or that, but we are all, to some extent, the product of other people's thoughts. We can't escape from each other. So it seems to me. But if I say and talk to you about me,
but in that, if two electrons,
of course,
went over 3 weeks ago,
yes,
how is it?
Well, something has. I suppose it's true that there would be all sorts of things that we're healthy, of course. And I suppose it would be true to say that in a sense, talks is resting. Do you understand that when I say that?
Yeah.
You see, some people need to rest. Some people are so confused and such a suffered a great deal before arriving here, and they have very strong, perhaps, feelings and emotions which are very material in their context, and they have to become adjusted. Sometimes it's necessary for them to go through a condition or a phase, if you like, of readjustment. It's difficult to explain some of these things, but whatever I say to you, to make you understand it, I've obviously got to bring it down to a sort of material level. And in consequence, it may lose some of the context that I would like to convey. I mean, this is how it is.
How do you know if I'm in your eyes?
Oh, we know, because we're invariably in tune or in touch. I mean, if someone is very near and dear to us, obviously we cannot see them and not hear them, and if possible we try to help them. And of course if they're approaching what you can guess, then of course we make a point of being present, so that when the person in question is free from the physical body, then we are there to help them and to help them to feel comforted and to readjust, because you do have some people who are earthbound, who just don't want to leave the physical world, don't want to leave the physical body, don't want to leave their places and loved ones, and they cling to the earth, because that's how their mentality is.
They've got healers wanting to do it.
Yes, well, this is a different case, but some people don't.
You know, aren't many dark spirits going to do a sin before
me? No, I wouldn't say for one moment that there are any dark spirits. You see, any darkness is of the person himself. It's within the person's mentality, it's within the person's makeup. You do know what you sometimes refer to as dreams are not necessarily dreams, because you have cheese to suffer, you know, or something like that. Sometimes they are definitely astral experiences, where you are released temporarily from the physical body, and you enter into an astral condition very near the earth. And there are all these different layers of consciousness which people can enter into. That's why on some level you do have many things which are almost similar, or very much like things upon the earth. But people, you don't understand, dear, I wish I knew how to. You know, people are no more than they think. And a person will think on a certain level and create for himself a certain set of circumstances and conditions and environments in which you will find himself.
Well, a good friend on this side, for instance, when he dies, I have a friend is more advanced mentally, and I'm seeing him again, and I feel so far on that he might be able to,
in other words, he might skip
certain
layers, if you like.
I can't understand that.
Well, of course he will. So this is why I think that if everybody understood this truth of communication, and that life after death does exist, does happen, I think if people understood this properly and applied it in their daily and material life, their whole outlook would be changed, and they would become changed in consequence, and help others to change, I think this truth is the only hope for the world. I really do. It's the fundamental truth behind all religion anyway. If there's no life after death, what is the point of religion? All religions preach, in some manner or form, something after death, but none of them attempt to prove it or to demonstrate it. And I think this is where, if people understood this to some extent, if not completely, and if they do, I think it's stupid, but if one could accept and understand it and then reason, it would change and help them. I think the whole world would be better for it, and people would think and act differently in consequence, and I think it would break down the barriers between nations and peoples and get away, you know, with a lot of the stupid nonsense that goes on. I mean, the creeds and the dogmas would sometimes nearly are separating people. I mean, look at Ireland, to some extent, that's a religious war. I mean, the Catholics against the Protestants, and so on. I think religion and intolerance builds barriers. I think a universal realization of what life is all about and that death is not the end could change the way of men in their thinking and their actions. This is why I see it. I'd like to feel that it could be so.
I wish it could.
And you know, really, you've really got to make me on my high horse. But it's not, you know, I feel rather guilty, because I don't want to fill it up all the time with other people wanting to speak.
Just as much as two pets, two dogs, have you got them carrying up in the
course? Of course, of course. You know, I do wish people could understand that in some instances it's true to say that animals are more intelligent than we are. That they are extremely aware and extremely sensitive to things which an ordinary human being isn't aware or conscious about. I think in the beginning, I mean, I can't prove this, but I would assume that before man became more sophisticated and more materialistic, when he was much more simple and lived nearer to nature, I think there's any reason to believe that he was more aware of these things then than he is today. With all his sophistication and scientific attitude and approach, I think science, of course, could well possibly in the future make this a living reality. I think that it is feasible there may come a time when science will perfect some form of communication between your world and ours, which will bring conviction.
Yes, I mean,
yes, the truth is that we are living now more than we even thought was possible. I'm not alive now. I'm not exactly the same. Of course I don't. I suppose in some respects we must change. No one can stand still. I mean, this is what life's all about. We're not stagnant. We're not going to stay stationary. We must change. We must assimilate new knowledge, new experience, new ideas, and in consequence change our opinions and our attitudes. This is what life is all about, surely.
Yeah, I have a great idea of how we all make a mistake, and the ideas of being changed.
Oh, I don't know. How can one Well, man is more and more materialistic, and it seems that he is certainly more materialistic than ever I can remember today. It seems to me that man is only concerned with self in the lower sense. There are others, of course, who do aspire and do try to lift themselves out of the mire, but it seems to me perhaps I'm being unfair. But frankly, the more I see of your world, the happier I am to be out of it. I mean, I can look back on my early years. I think we all can. I suppose some people would say, oh, well, it's a sign of getting old, and you're nostalgic for the past. I'm not nostalgic for the past, exactly that, but it does seem to me that I can know the world is so changing, and the worse part of self seems to be coming uppermost in the object people. It doesn't seem to be the way of life that I remember. all the feelings that we have, all my feelings, tips, and of course everyone has mostly to stay for relatives and trust and for, and then that's more. One would have thought that one would have learned lessons. But one sees in your world now attitudes and conditions which appall. Although I will say this in fairness, I think that a lot of the young people are not as stupid as we were. You know, we were not as blind. I think the young are not going to be as stupid as we were. They're not going to be led by the nose. I don't want to go into details because I don't want to take up any more time, but I just feel that the wars, we brought them on ourselves. I don't think we can blame anyone else, only ourselves.
Not concerned with your father?
I think that we made a contribution. I think that we created circumstances and conditions. And of course now, I think younger people are not going to be so easily led. They are now beginning to be more analytical and beginning to become more, open-hearted and open-minded perhaps than we were. Of course, one can go back to all this business of class and position, and there are so many aspects to it. There are some things that were very good have been lost, and some things that were very bad, of course, have become lost in the process of change. But I like to think that the future, when the young people could be much better, I think that there's every reason to believe it could be. What I suppose distresses me, although I say it in sense it shouldn't, is a submissive society, which seems to be going too far in one direction. I think that this is a mistake, though again I may be wrong. Let's make things with that to where I started from, but not wearing any clothes. Everything that has been given life isn't lost, it must continue. And when a child comes here, it is cared for and nurtured and looked after and educated and becomes, in consequence, of course, a more spiritually conscious and aware adult, I suppose that you know how to put it.
Yeah.
Oh, we have so many aspects of life which are so like here, yeah, but many that are not. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You know, I should be getting into trouble and taking too much time.
Marina, you are connecting the education in this world.
Yes, unfortunately.
Well, what do you think of the education which is being fostered on by the political people? And
I think we have a very unfortunate as being facetious. There's many things I would, I don't know. I think there again, you see, I think that it is vital and important that people should have freedom to choose for themselves.
Yeah.
I think this is vital. I do see, of course, the other aspect that there should be given an equal opportunity for all, and one has to accept that. But I do think that it should be left to the individual to choose for himself. And if a person is fortunate enough to be blessed, if that is the word, with more of earthly possessions than perhaps others, and they wish their children to be educated in a certain direction, if they think it is good, and they wish to do it, then they should have the freedom to do it. And I would like also to feel that those who are less fortunate could have the same opportunity. I think that's only fair and right. But of course, I suppose the ultimate will be, if there is such a thing as the ultimate, a class of society, which on the surface sounds a good thing, but it can also be rather boring, in a sense. You know what I mean? I don't really know. I'm getting perhaps a little muddled thinking about this, because I do think change has to come. It has come in my lifetime, and it will come in yours. And the youngsters, of course, will see many changes which we would have thought impossible. But I don't think anybody, if they want to see the truth, would like to see everything brought into being that was on the same level. I like come to imagine. And then say, who are the people who are going to do the menial jobs? The father may be the smith, the clients will be in various things which will make it possible that many jobs will require service and service. I don't know.
Can you tell us if there's any life on any other planet?
Oh, yes, I'm sure there is.
Can they ever be to any other planet?
No. But there again, you see, I think it's obvious to me, I don't know really, can't prove it, but I'm quite sure there are thousands of worlds, not just two or three, and there are different starts of being, and different aspects of evolution. You see, the Earth, when we're on the Earth, we have this bunch of such notion, qualified but now, idea that we are the only living creation, that we are the be-all and the end-all, and that there is nothing else but us, which I think is rather non-reflection now, I see things so differently, but I think it's rather ludicrous. Why should there only be one form of life or existence or one world, when we do know, science already is beginning to prove that, before, there are many worlds. And I think the man-made time contacts some of these worlds, and possibly the beings on those worlds.
But if they're more advanced on the other planet, why haven't they contacted us before?
Because they haven't been able to, or because they didn't want to, because they didn't want to be contaminated.
Probably not.
Another thing I've found, the sense of humour, is my thought. People do have a sense of humour. You know, we laugh and we joke. Not perhaps quite the kind of jokes that one might have had on Earth in some of these pictures. Wouldn't you be surprised if we had lots of that in
it?
You know, I'm taking up a whole sitting room for this. And then you'll go away and you'll say, it had to be in Medina, and I would have had so much more. I hope you haven't found it, What did you say, Joan?
I didn't say
anything.
I can't say too much
with you. No, education. Go little there.
Yeah, is there anybody over there that you can ask questions?
Of course. Of course, there are great servants here. I know you won't laugh, but if I were to tell you that I have met individuals over here, that, people that I've read about or known about in some shape or form, I've met some of them here, and of course they're more advanced than I am, and very informed.
People like Lodge.
Oh, people like Lodge and some of them cooks.
Yes.
And all manner of kind of people.
Yes.
I know, I suppose this is where one has to be so careful. People who don't understand the subject, who deride it. They just laugh and say, well,
you might meet people like Erasmus.
There's no reason why not, and what a wonderful soul he was.
Mm.
Now, he was somebody after my own heart, for Erasmus. I don't know, I feel I'm staying too long.
Can you give any message to one or two people saying who, as you say, divine this sort of thing, and think that it's madness and that it's quite wrong?
Well, my dear girl, if you play the recordings,
yes,
for them to listen to, then it's up to them.
Yes.
What is the point of sending a message if the person won't even listen to it?
You've got to leave them alone.
They don't even want to listen to the recordings, some of them.
No.
I think it is because they're afraid.
What?
In other words, some just feel the whole
they
thing.
They can't believe.
Do what?
They can't believe.
Well, this is very nice, but it's understandable. One has to try and put oneself in their shoes. I think it's very difficult sometimes for some people to even assume that it's feasible or possible. And yet they will wildly accept all sorts of things because, for instance, in the Bible, various things that people coming back from the so-called dead or communicating under some condition or other, because it happened 2,000 years or more ago, and it's in the Bible, it must be true, and they accept it wildly and blindly. And yet the same thing is happening now. I mean, for instance, if you were to tell some people that Jesus told fortunes, they'd be horrified. Mm-hmm. But he did. He told the world that the world had fortunes.
Mm-hmm.
The past, and some of our future. And if Christ hadn't appeared to the disciples in the upper room, and to others at varying times, there would have been no Christianity. My dear, if you can't make, well, no one can make anyone do anything
about
it. One must leave it entirely to them. If they don't want to know, well, eventually they'll find out for themselves. Sooner or later. But of course, if they were to understand and assimilate this to some extent, it certainly could help them. It could change them, I would have thought. And in any case, if you are in the position of having lost, as the world terms it, someone you love very much, the realization that they are not dead, that they are near you, watching over you, helping you, and that you can, under certain conditions, communicate. But then again, you don't have to come to spiritualists and mediums. I would have thought the evidence, quite apart from spiritualists and mediums, was enormous. Various souls of various kinds of appearance of people, millions, if I before, which prove there must be something, even if people don't fully understand it. I think a lot of people are afraid.
If we want to get in touch with you, the only way we can do it is come to experience.
Yes, that's true, but it doesn't alter the fact that under certain conditions, I might be able to come to you, and I might be able to do something that would make you sit up and say, my God, what's that?
I wish you could.
I mean, for instance, supposing I didn't say I'm going to do it, and not saying I can necessarily do it, but it is possible, it has happened, as some people on certain occasions have been able to do certain material, factual things that have absolutely convinced the person concerned who's witnessed it the reality of something happening. I mean, for instance, now supposing, for argument's sake, you were sitting in your office and I were to come into your office and I were to pick up a folder and throw it across the room in broad daylight, I would have thought that would make some of you sit up.
It wouldn't make you sit up with a star, but it wouldn't get your message across.
No, it wouldn't get my message, but it would make somebody, I mean, this poltergeist business, I've been very interested in this. And I'm wondering if I might develop into becoming one. I am being serious. Because I think it would be marvelous if temporarily, for a brief spell, I could come, for instance, to your home and I could do something unusual, pick up a vase and it's possible under certain conditions. I wouldn't take the vows, but if I could do something to attract attention, to let you know that I was present.
You stop the clock twice.
Yes, I've done silly things, simple things.
Okay.
I want to do something tangible.
If you want to do it, Dina, why can't you do it?
Well, my dear, it's not as easy as that.
Okay.
You see, I told you earlier that if a person thinks, concentrates his or her thoughts on whatever it is, it becomes a reality. This is true under natural normal conditions. But the point is that we are dealing, I have to be dealing, with certain material conditions which I no longer, well, in tune with exactly. But the point is that I could possibly, and this has happened and does happen, even for a brief moment or two, to get into the condition of sufficiency, and it could be material to me, and then I could presumably, and this is what the polarized sort of people do who specialize, I say that they really specialize, but they do it. If I can do it, I would. It's being able to become tangible, or to utilize some sort of tangible force that's in harmony with your condition, to be able to remove objects, or do something that leads to attract attention. I mean, for instance...
But what do you attract attention? What do you want someone to do?
Well, I suppose in the initial stages, just to let them know there's some presence there, and then possibly to make contact with us in some shape or form, either by sitting with a table. And now that's an interesting thing. There's no reason why I, or others, shouldn't be able to contact you by table, talking with you, or messages from the table, or perhaps through automatic writing.
Well, it might be that easy.
Well, I mean, the problem is that if you get a pencil and you get a paper, and you hold it lightly in your hand, and don't make any effort at all of your own whatsoever, and just let us try, let us do it myself, with me trying to write.
Brian.